This is In the News for December 8th, 2005. I'm Scott Bergwin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. First story today, and all stories, the three items today come from Common Dreams News Center at www.commondreams.org. First up, from oneworld.net, tire giant Firestone hit with lawsuit over slave-like conditions at rubber plantation. It's written by Haider Rizvi. Firestone, a multinational rubber manufacturing giant known for its automobile tires, has come under fire from human rights and environmental groups for its alleged use of child labor and slave-like working conditions at a plantation in Liberia. Recently, the International Labor Rights Fund, or ILRF, a Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group, filed a lawsuit charging that thousands of workers, including minors, toil in virtual slavery at Bridgestone's Firestone rubber plantation in Liberia. According to the complaint filed in the United States District Court in Venice, California, Firestone, which has operated in the West African country since the 1920s, largely depends on poor and often illiterate workers to tap tons of raw latex from rubber trees using primitive tools exposing them to hazardous pesticides and fertilizers. At Firestone, quote, all of the workers are poverty-stricken Africans enduring extremely inhuman conditions under the constant guard of American and now Japanese overseers who live in the finest houses in Liberia, looking down on the field hands from their verandas in the company's private golf course, end quote. That's from a member of the group, the International Labor Rights Fund. By contrast, they also say that, quote, most of the workers have never been off of the plantation and do not even know that the world has moved on and slavery has been abolished, end quote. The company denies the use of child labor and claims that its jobs are among the highest paying in Liberia, but right activists who have visited the plantation attest to the desperation and fear conveyed by Firestone's workers. Jerome Verdier, an environmental lawyer from Liberia, told One World, quote, I have seen six people living in one room without any toilet, electricity, or running water. The company has no justification whatsoever to keep on exploiting those people, end quote. Verdier and others say thousands of workers at the plantation cannot meet daily harvesting quota without unpaid aid, requiring them to put their own children to work or face starvation. In many cases, activists say Firestone overseers not only know about the massive use of child labor, but also compel it. The lawsuit charges, quote, workers are told that if they can't make their daily quota, they should put their children to work, end quote. According to the ILRF, each official worker at the Firestone plantation is required to deliver 450 pounds of latex per day to meet quota, an amount many adult workers fail to produce. Verdier told a news conference at the UN headquarters in New York Wednesday, quote, they work for $3.19 a day and work close to 20 hours every day, end quote. Most plantation workers, according to the lawsuit, remain, quote, at the mercy of Firestone for everything from food to health care to education. They risk expulsion and starvation if they raise even minor complaints, and the company makes willful use of this situation to exploit these workers as they have since 1926, end quote. The 240-square-mile plantation has an official workforce of 6,000, out of which at least 4,000 are reportedly facing extremely inhumane conditions. Again, that story is from oneworld.net. We took it from commondreams.org, and there's more on that story at both those sites. The next news item is from the San Francisco Chronicle, written by C.J. Schexnader. Title is Watchdog Challenges U.S. Drug War in Colombia. This is out of Bogota, Colombia. A U.S. government report to be released next week raises serious questions about the effectiveness of the multi-billion-dollar U.S. anti-drug campaign in Colombia, despite moves by the Bush administration to extend the program. The 52-page report by the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, an advanced copy of which has been obtained by the San Francisco Chronicle, challenges administration conclusions that the drug interdiction effort known as Plan Colombia, a five-year program that ends this year, has reduced the amount of cocaine available in the United States. The report was skeptical of the statistics the government relied on for its upbeat assessments, calling its information on cocaine production and use problematic. It also said the Office of National Drug Control Policy had failed to fully address previous, quote, recommendations for approving illicit drug data collection and analysis, end quote. On November 9 in Bogota, John Walters, director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, said Plan Colombia had been responsible for a substantial increase in the street price of cocaine in the United States and a drop in its quality from Colombia, which supplies an estimated 90% of the world's cocaine and an estimated $65 billion in illegal drugs to the U.S. market. Walters said, quote, there were those who did not believe it was possible to change the availability of cocaine in the United States. What we're announcing today is there's no question that it's happened, end quote. But the GAO, the nonpartisan investigative arm of Congress, specifically criticized those figures, saying that they reflected trends that, quote, could reflect law enforcement patterns rather than drug availability patterns, end quote, and that the number of U.S. cocaine users remained constant at about 2 million. Other sources estimate the number of chronic and occasional cocaine users may be as high as 6 million, the report stated. The GAO also found the White House assessment of the amount of cocaine entered the United States in 2004, 325 metric tons to 675 metric tons, to be too varied to be useful for assessing interdiction efforts. In an interview, David Murray, a special assistant to Walters, downplayed the report. He said, quote, we have more data and more analysts working on this out of our office than anyone. We feel we have some of the best information in the world on the issue. We are trying to make sense of a business whose very core element is hiding from plain view, end quote. Since 2000, the United States has poured about $6 billion into Latin America to fund anti-drug efforts, more than half of it earmarked for Plan Colombia. Its supporters in Colombia say the program is crucial not only for battling the drug trade, but also to combat left-wing guerrillas and right-wing paramilitaries involved in the nation's four-decade armed conflict that depend on financing from drug profits. The Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, the country's largest rebel group, raked in as much as $1.3 billion in 2003, of which an estimated 45% came from cocaine, according to a report released earlier this year by the Joint Intelligence Command, the Colombian equivalent of the U.S. National Security Council. Plan Colombia is essential for what we do, said Colonel Yamlik Moreno of the National Police's Anti-Drug Division. Without the funding, he said, we would have to reduce our operations by 90%. The U.S. Colombia strategy, which targets cocaine production at its source, is aimed at reducing supply and driving up prices and thereby discouraging consumption in the United States. Military aid provided by Washington over the years includes combat helicopters, light weapons ranging from machine guns to rocket launchers and intelligence technology, as well as advisors, chemicals and fumigation planes to spray coca fields. Just last month, Walters helped inaugurate a $12 million helicopter hangar just north of Bogota. This again was from the San Francisco Chronicle. There's more on this article as well, including the amounts of money that have gone to various countries in Central and South America in the so-called drug war, topped out by Colombia each year by a long ways. And, of course, the GAO is raising questions about the overall effectiveness and whether the reports that are coming out for gains being made are accurate, if not misleading. Final item today from The Independent in the United Kingdom, also taken from commondreams.org. How America Plotted to Stop Kyoto Deal. This is by Andrew Buncombe, dated today, December 8th. A detailed and disturbing strategy document has revealed an extraordinary American plan to destroy Europe's support for the Kyoto Treaty on climate change. The ambitious behind-the-scenes plans was passed to The Independent this week, just as 189 countries are painfully trying to agree to the second stage of Kyoto at the UN Climate Conference in Montreal. It was pitched to companies such as Ford Europe, Lufthansa, and the German utility giant RWE. Put together by a lobbyist who is a senior official at a group partly funded by ExxonMobil, the world's biggest oil company and a fierce opponent of anti-global warming measures, the plan seeks to draw together major international companies, academics, think tanks, commentators, journalists, and lobbyists from across Europe into a powerful grouping to destroy further EU support for the treaty. It details just how the so-called, quote, European Sound Climate Policy Coalition, end quote, would work. Based in Brussels, the plan would have anti-Kyoto position papers, expert spokesmen, detailed advice, and networking instantly available to any politician or company who wanted to question the wisdom of proceeding with Kyoto on its demanding cuts in carbon dioxide emissions. It has been drawn up by Chris Horner, a senior official with the Washington-based Competitive Enterprise Institute, a veteran campaigner against Kyoto and against the evidence of climate change. One of his colleagues, who describes himself as an advisor to President George Bush, was the subject of a censure motion by the Commons last year after he attacked the government's chief scientist. Mr. Horner, whose CEI group has received about $1.5 million from ExxonMobil is convinced that Europe could be successfully influenced by such a policy coalition just as the U.S. government has been. He thinks Europe's weakening economies are likely to be increasingly ill at ease with the cost of meeting Kyoto. In particular, he has spotted something he thinks most of Europe has not yet woken up to. Most of the original 15 EU Kyoto signatories, Britain is an exception, are on course to miss their 2010 CO2 reduction targets. But under the terms of the treaty, they will face large fines for doing so in terms of much bigger reduction targets in any second phase. These will prove unacceptably costly to their economies, Mr. Horner believes, even if they try to buy their way out by buying up quote-unquote spare emissions for cash from countries such as Russia. Mr. Horner believes the moment for his coalition is at hand and has been seeking support for it from multinational companies. In his pitch to one major company, he wrote, quote, "In the U.S., an informal coalition has helped successfully to avert adoption of a Kyoto-style program by maintaining a rational voice for civil society and ensuring a legitimate debate over climate, economics, science, and politics. This model should be emulated to guide similar efforts in Europe," end quote. Elsewhere, he claimed, a coalition addressing the economic and social impacts of the EU climate agenda must be broad-based, cross-industry, and rooted in the member states. Other companies, including Lufthansa, Exxon, Ford, have already indicated their interest. Last night, green groups hit out. Kurt Davies, Greenpeace's climate campaign coordinator, which initially obtained the document, said, quote, "These are the hitmen for the Bush administration and the likes of Exxon. They are behind the scenes doing the dirty work. They are extending efforts to Europe where they are trying to undermine the momentum to solve global warming," end quote. While there is nothing illegal about the lobbying, the documents reveal a rare insight into the well-funded efforts within the U.S. to influence opinion at senior levels of European corporations. Campaigners say the campaign is similar to a notorious lobbying effort carried out during the 1990s to undermine support for Kyoto within the United States. Again, that news item is from the Independent of UK and taken from commondreams.org. This has been In the News for December 8th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin from KOSWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'll talk to you next time.